While you're standing, let's go ahead and read our passage this morning. We'll be in Matthew's Gospel, Matthew chapter 2, beginning with verse 1. After Jesus was born in Bethlehem in Judea during the time of King Herod, Magi from the east came to Jerusalem and asked, "Where is the one who has been born King of the Jews? We saw his star in the east and have come to worship him." When King Herod heard this, he was disturbed, and all Jerusalem with him. When he had called together all the people's chief priests and teachers of the law, he asked them where the Christ was to be born. "In Bethlehem in Judea," they replied, "for this is what the prophet has written. But you, Bethlehem, in the land of Judah, are by no means least among the rulers of Judah. For out of you will come a ruler who will be the shepherd of all my people, Israel." Then Herod called the Magi secretly and found out from them the exact time the star had appeared. He sent them to Bethlehem and said, "Go and make a careful search for the child. As soon as you find him, report to me so that I too may go and worship him." After they had heard the king, they went on their way, and the star they had seen in the east went ahead of them until it stopped over the place where the child was. When they saw the star, they were overjoyed. On coming to the house, they saw the child, his mother Mary, and they bowed down and worshiped him. Then they opened their treasures and presented him with gifts of gold and incense and of myrrh. And having been warned in a dream not to go back to Herod, they returned to their country by another route. This is the word of God for us, the people of God. Thanks be to God. So if you have spent any time in the church in your life, any time, maybe you've grown up in the church, maybe you are familiar with kind of the way things tend to run this time of year, familiar with the schedule. We've talked about it over the past couple of weeks and the season of Advent and the significance of it, and that it's an opportunity to remember leading up to the celebration of Christ's birth, which we'll celebrate tomorrow at Christmas Eve. If any of this is familiar to you, then you know that we just jumped way ahead. Right? Tomorrow, Christmas Eve, we will celebrate the announcement of Christ's birth as Luke records it in his gospel, and this morning, he's been born, the Magi are coming. We are not just taking this story and just twisting it around just to have fun with it. As we have been in this series, Manger and Mystery, this idea that something so familiar to us, the season of Christmas, as I said, if you've been in the church, the season of Advent, you've been a part of the candle lighting. You're used to seeing the church dressed up and decorated at Christmas time as we do our homes. These are familiar passages that we read. You're maybe used to hearing some of the same stories every year and singing some of the same songs. And in fact, for you, it's not Christmas if we don't do those things. Like if we don't sing the favorites, if we don't read those passages that we're used to hearing that recount the birth of Christ or the time leading up to it or the people that were a part of it, then for you, it's, hey, you know what, it hadn't really been Christmas. But our hope in this series has been to take something that is familiar and to be challenged to dare to believe that there's still mystery in it. That we can't take the mystery of the fact that God entered this world, that God put on flesh and came to live among us, and God chose to do that as a baby, a helpless, weak, dependent baby. And that in and of itself is a mysterious thing. That God would use the people that God has used to make this amazing thing happen is mysterious. That God would call people from foreign lands to come and worship Jesus is mysterious. And so we've been invited to consider the mystery in our first week to remember that, yes, we know of the cross. We know how the story goes. But what if, like Mary and Joseph, we began at just the manger, at the birth of this child, and allowed ourselves to believe that there was nothing but potential in this life? That there's something worth hoping in, that things could actually be different, that maybe things are going to change. Maybe God had indeed made good on God's promise to send a Savior, Messiah, to come to his people. And so to dare to maybe kind of pause at the stable, pause at the manger and look forward, rather than looking back through the lens of the cross. And then in what would have been week two, we all got a snow vacation day that day, but we're invited to remember Zechariah's story and Elizabeth's story and the story that would become John the Baptist or John the Forerunner, the one who went before Jesus, preparing people for Jesus's the beginning of Jesus's ministry. That in this season of familiarity and when we get so caught up in those things that steal our attention, to remember and to rekindle the sacred. Like Zechariah, who was faithfully serving as priest when he encountered the angel who told him that Elizabeth, who was barren, would be with child, and that child would be important, that he would play a significant role in the ministry of Jesus. To rekindle those things that force us to pause and to listen, to believe that God is still speaking, that God is still moving, and God is still inviting us to be a part of what God is doing. And last week, we were invited to remember Mary's song. That while we might have songs that define different seasons in our lives or that memories are connected to, what would happen if we were to take up this song? The song that elevated the weak and brought down the high. The song that celebrated humility. The song that speaks against pride. The song that is full of, like, it's revolutionary. That God would send this child into the world to do something new, to turn the world as we know it on its head. And this morning we're invited to reclaim the star. And yes, we've jumped ahead in the story a little bit, but I think it's important for us to truly appreciate what we'll celebrate tomorrow night and then going on through Christmas and into the new year. To consider what it might mean for us to reclaim the star and the significance of it and the story of these three strangers who came from the east to pay respects and to worship at the feet of Jesus. In order to continue to lean into this mystery that is the birth of God into this world as a child. This God who put on flesh and this God who dwells in unapproachable light and yet became approachable in the person of Christ, not only became approachable, but approached us. God who made the move, right, on our behalf. Not waiting for us to come, but God who came first. In order for us to appreciate that, we have to wrestle with the distinction between who you follow and what is guiding your life. The distinction between who you follow and what is guiding your life. And considering what it means to be in relationship with Jesus, we often use this word, like following Jesus. We look at those who were a part of the story, those who both wrote the gospel accounts and those who were a part of the story that is told of Jesus' ministry and what he did between his birth and crucifixion and resurrection, and then those who would go on and become a part of seeing the church born into this world and being a part of what God is doing through that. Call them followers of Christ. Right? This idea that life with Christ is meant to be some sort of journey, that we follow Jesus. Even those who weren't a part of the inner circle were considered followers of Christ. Because they still wanted to be where Jesus was. They still wanted to hear the things that Jesus taught. They wanted to be a part of the things that Jesus was doing. And some of them would even go on to continue to do those things. Followers of Jesus. We invite you to consider what it might mean for your own life to be a follower of Jesus. To be a disciple, that is, a learner. And disciple and follower are so closely related as we consider it in Scripture and the way that it was intended and what was meant by a disciple or a follower of Jesus. You see, it was customary for those who were followers or disciples of a rabbi to actually, like, physically follow that rabbi around from place to place. If the rabbi was going to teach people, they were right there with the rabbi. If the rabbi was going to, in Jesus' case, going to heal people, then they were right there with the rabbi. And there was a saying that was, may you be covered in the dust of your rabbi. That means may you walk so closely behind your rabbi that you actually, the dust from their feet actually gets on you. And I think that what has happened in our culture today is that our culture has cheapened what it means to follow someone, particularly what it means for us to follow Jesus. Right? When we think of a follower, or when we think of following someone, right now it's not uncommon for us to begin to think of like social media, right? The people that we follow on social media. But what has happened as a result of that, maybe you follow a lot of people, maybe you have a lot of followers, I don't know, but there's little investment that's necessary when we consider following people on social media, right? You might decide to follow someone maybe on Twitter or Instagram or whatever because you like the things that they say, you like the pictures that they post, maybe there's, you know, common interests, maybe you do it to try to win a sweepstakes and, you know, you invite 30 of your friends to follow them and then they get mad at you and unfollow you, But we will choose to follow people until the things that those people say and the things that those people post just become noise in our lives, right, to the point that we don't actually hear the people around us, or more importantly, to the point that we have lost the ability to hear God. Not only that, but if someone that we're following begins to, like, maybe get too political, right, they use that platform as an opportunity to share their political views, or you know, maybe you get tired of seeing them post pictures of their cats or whatever. You just unfollow them. Right? No risk. Moderate reward. Little investment. And when we begin to apply the world's like playbook to what it means to follow people to life with Christ, then that becomes a dangerous thing. And we don't necessarily intentionally think that way, but this world has convinced us that things should be easy, that things should be comfortable. And if they're not easy and they're not comfortable, and if we disagree with something that someone is saying, then we either push back or just quit following them. We quit allowing them to be a voice in our lives. And maybe you're here this morning and you have that kind of like follow-unfollow relationship with Jesus. You're on again, off again, like you are with some people in your life. And I want you to hear that regardless of where you are with that, that Jesus never stops being concerned with you. It doesn't matter how closely or you know, where you are, like, yeah, Jesus and I, we're not even really speaking right now. That doesn't affect the way that Jesus feels about you. He is not temperamental in his love for you. Jesus is not going to give you the cold shoulder. Or maybe some of us, you're like, no, I do. Like, I am a follower of Jesus. But the way that you follow Jesus is like, if I can just keep Jesus in eyesight, then I'm good, right? I'm still following him. I'm still walking the direction that he walked. But as long as he's in eyesight, like if he's not, you know, if I'm not this close to him, if I'm not going to be, you know, covered in his dust, and I'm, like, as long as he's in eyesight, then I've got a lot of room to work with, right? I can still see Jesus. He's out there, but I can go over here and do my thing. And then if I get, okay, there's Jesus. I can still see him. But I'm following him at a distance because I want room to work with in my own life. So it's important for us to consider what it means to follow Jesus, because that's what we're invited into. It's what we're called to. Our friend Jay Miller, who's a part of our Crossroads family, who lost his life to cancer a few years back, had this saying. He used to believe, he believed very much. But he would always say, I believe that my eternity, I'm already living in it. Life with Jesus is not just a get out of jail card free later. If I'm promised eternity with Jesus, I'm living in that right now. And it's what allowed him to face something as terrifying, as painful, and difficult as cancer with the faith that he did. And his mentality was, look, if Jesus heals me, I get to tell that story. But if Jesus takes me, then I'm with him. Win-win situation. Right? He was someone who tried to follow closely with Jesus. So it's important for us to consider that it's meant to mean something for our life right now, not just later. We've lost what it means to invest our lives in following. We don't know the investment and the effort, because this world has convinced us that things should just be easy and they should be immediate. Now, were any of you in here deadheads, like you followed the Grateful Dead? Did one person? You did not. You weren't even alive, man. I can see the people in this room. When you raise your hand, I know it's you, Barrett Connor. You don't even know who the Grateful Dead are. Those were people who knew how to follow, right? They would give days, weeks, months, like years of their lives to following this band around and hearing them play. We don't even have the discipline to follow a band like that anymore. Right? If we can't like pirate their music, we don't want anything to do with them. If it weren't for Spotify, none of us would listen to music because we don't want to fork over the money to do it. We've lost the understanding or the appreciation for what it means to make an investment in following Jesus. So it brings up the question, what is directing your life? Because there's a difference between who you are following and what is directing your life. Like, what serves as the engine that drives you to follow Jesus? What serves as the inspiration? What keeps you on track? What keeps you focused on following Jesus? What drives you? What directs you in following Jesus? In our story this morning, we see two very different examples of what can direct our lives. We see the Magi, and we see King Herod. And you might be familiar with the story of the Magi. In fact, we have become so familiar with the Magi that we have assigned some meaning to this passage that is like doesn't even show up. That Matthew is not necessarily saying. We assume that there are three Magi because there were how many gifts? Three gifts, right? There could be one guy who is a superstar and others who are like, oh man, we were supposed to bring gifts to this thing? I didn't know it was that kind of gathering. We assume that there are three. We assign meaning to the gifts of gold and frankincense and myrrh. And I think there is meaning to those things, but we assume it to be true. We've even given names to these three wise men, Balthazar, Melchior, and Jaspar. We've become so familiar with these guys that we know who they are, right? We write songs about them. We sing songs about them. Maybe there were three of them. Maybe they were kings. Maybe those gifts had the meaning that we've assigned to them. We do know that they were likely astrologers, that they spent their time studying the night sky because they believe that it's one of the ways that they can learn. It's one of the ways that they understand what's going on in the world. Whether it was God they believed in, the God that we understand, the God that we know, or whether they just believed that there was something bigger going on in the heavens where the vehicle by which that thing greater than themselves spoke into this world and told stories and gave accounts of what was happening. We're not sure exactly, but they studied the sky. They looked for signs. They looked to see what the heavens were proclaiming. And as those who study the sky, they maybe alongside that had heard news or over the years had studied different religions. But there was one that caught their attention, the news from the people of God, the people of Israel, the Jewish people, of a king who would be born. Maybe that was tucked away in their minds, and when they saw this star, they had to follow it. They had to go and see what this was pointing to. And so they went. And this wasn't an easy trip. This was likely a trip that took months. It was over rough terrain. They probably knew hunger. They knew thirst. They knew the pain of long travel. And yet they stayed the course. They followed the star, but they were directed by their desire to see this king who was born. They followed the star, but were directed by a desire to see this king who was born, to bring their gifts before him, to bow down and worship. The thing that is directing our hearts determines what we follow in our lives, or how we follow in our lives. See, on the flip side of these wise men, on the flip side of these astrologers, we also see King Herod, a very different example. There are some commentators that call Matthew's account around the birth of Jesus the adult version of the not family-friendly version of the birth of Christ, whereas Luke is the version that we sit around and open around the fireplace on Christmas Eve, or that we read from in church. That's the family-friendly version of the birth of Christ. But Matthew's is very different. He gives like one verse announcing the birth of Christ, and then he begins to deal with the other people that are a part of the story that surround that. The three visitors, the three wise men, but then maybe more importantly, King Herod. We tend to think of him and see him in Scripture as Herod the Great. And yet that's not the only thing that Herod's been called. He's also referred to as Herod the Madman. Herod, who is hungry for power. Herod, who has done whatever it takes to have power and to protect that power. And one of the things that we see in Herod is, yes, he says, hey, when you go and find this child, come back and tell me where he is so that I can go and worship him. Herod's desire is not to worship this child who was born king, but his desire was to protect his power, which meant doing away with this child who was born king. Those who are in places of power spend a great deal of energy protecting the power that they have. When someone opposed Herod, Herod lashed out. Herod lashed out because he could. Herod lashed out because he was powerful. Herod lashed out because he wanted to remain in power. In the first 3 years of Herod's reign, he crushed all who opposed him. He inflicted incredibly heavy taxes on those who were subject to him. He did not share authority. He killed close associates. He killed his wife and a couple of his children. As Herod was beginning to near the end of his life, he made an arrangement that all the Jewish leaders and important people would be gathered up, and on the day of his death that they would all be assassinated so that the people would be weeping. And not weeping for Herod, obviously, but Herod just wanted to know that there would be weeping when he left this earth. What directed Herod's life was Herod's desire to remain in power. And we can give Herod a hard time. We can say, gosh, what a madman. Why would he be so worried about the birth of a baby? What irrational fear. Except for the fact that, as one commentator says, scoff not at Herod until you have acknowledged the Herod in yourself. Scoff not at Herod until you have acknowledged the Herod in yourself. The part of you that wants to remain in power. The part of you that wants to remain in control. The part of you that wants to dictate this is how life is going to be. That part that directs then how you follow Jesus. If I follow Jesus at enough of a distance, then I am free to do what I want here. I can check in with Jesus when I really need him, but I'm not really willing to give Jesus control over my life because I have power, even if it's the illusion of power, and I want to retain that. We can't give Herod a hard time unless we are willing to deal with the Herod that resides in our hearts. So what is it that directs your life? And how does that determine how you follow? Because if the thing that directs your life is the desire for pleasure, then you are going to follow things that allow for that. If the thing that directs your life is a desire to be accepted, a desire to be wanted, then you are going to follow the things that people say about who you should be in hopes that you somehow measure up to people's expectations so that you are seen as worthy or so that you feel wanted. If you are directed by a desire for wealth, then you are going to follow and make decisions that put you in situations where you can obtain wealth. If you are driven or if you are directed by guilt in your life, then it is going to affect the way that you follow Jesus. So yes, the invitation is to follow. But before we consider what it means to follow, we have to consider what is directing our lives. What is at the source? What is the engine that is driving the way that we follow Jesus? The way that we walk and operate in this world? We have to be willing to reclaim that which is worth following. Is the thing that is directing your life drawing you closer to Jesus? Or is it keeping you at a distance? Is the thing that is directing your life drawing you closer to Jesus, or is it keeping you at odds with Jesus? Is the thing that is directing your life drawing you closer to Jesus, or is it leaving you in a place where you are so ashamed of the decisions that you've made that you think there is no way that Jesus can possibly want anything to do with me? For these three visitors who traveled a long way, it was their desire to bow down and worship before this king who was born that directed their life. It kept them on the path of following the star that would lead them closer and closer and closer to Jesus until they were finally face to face with him. What is directing your life? And is it leading you closer to Jesus? Or is it drawing you further and further away? Is it leading you closer to Jesus, or is it drawing you off course? After Jesus was born in Bethlehem in Judea, during the time of King Herod, Magi from the east came to Jerusalem and asked, "Where is the one who has been born King of the Jews?" Such an important distinction that Matthew makes in recording this. Where is the one who has been born King of the Jews? This was not a title that he would earn. This was not a title that he had to work for. This was a title that was his by birthright. The one who was already King of the Jews. Not because he proved himself, but because of who he was. Would Jesus lay down his life? Would he be elevated to the highest place, as Paul writes in Philippians 2, given the name that is above every name, that the name of Jesus, every knee shall bow in heaven and on earth, and every tongue confess that Jesus Christ is Lord to the glory of God the Father. Yes. But the one who has been born King of the Jews, the one who is king, whether he is king of your life or not, what does your worship of that king look like? You see, for these magi, for these wise men, we see that worship was watching, worship was expectant, worship was paying attention. The desire to worship kept them alert to what was happening around them. And when they saw the sign, they were ready to go. They were ready to take that next step. We see that worship for them was inconvenient. It was not easy to make this trip, and yet they were directed, they were guided, they were driven by their desire to worship. It kept them following that which was ahead of them. We see for them that worship is upheaval. Worship is walking and standing face to face with the powers of the world. and saying, yeah, you're not what we're looking for. I mean, how significant is that? That they went and stood before the king, Herod, only to ask the king, hey, where is the king that was born? That's the one we're looking for. And that did not leave Herod in good headspace. Worship is upheaval. And then we see that worship is also costly. They traveled a great distance only to lay these gifts at the feet of Jesus. And finally, worship redirects. Worship points them in a new direction. They did not go back by the way that they had come. Instead, they went a different direction, having fulfilled that which was promised to Abraham, that through Abraham, God would send salvation for the world, not just for the Jews, but for Gentiles, those who were not Jewish, those who were outsiders, those who should not have been at the feet of Jesus celebrating his birth, but who came because they were driven by a desire to worship. No matter how inconvenient, no matter the cost, no matter the upheaval that it would cause, and no matter the fact that it would redirect the course of their lives. What is the source of your worship? What drives you? What directs you? What guides you in the way that you follow Jesus? What directs you in the way that you worship? Is it just a desire to remain loosely connected to Christ? Or instead, are you willing to consider that worship is supposed to be so much more? That it's meant to put us in a place where we are willing to be inconvenienced, where we are willing to sacrifice, where we are willing to weigh the cost and say, it is worth it, my life, that I might be nearer to the one who saved it and the one who has purpose for it. Maybe the place to begin this morning is simply to understand the distinction between praise and true worship. As Paul writes in Romans chapter 12, offer our bodies as living sacrifices. This is our spiritual act of worship. Worship is so much more than the songs that we sing. It is about surrendering our lives to the life of Christ. It is about laying our gifts down at the feet of Jesus. It is about allowing Jesus to redirect. It is about allowing Jesus to cause upheaval and to overthrow the Herods in our hearts and to set us on a new course. How is it this morning that God is calling you to reclaim the star? That God is calling you to reclaim what it means to follow Jesus? What it means and what it looks like in your life? Where is it that God is seeking to dismantle the powers that you have established in your heart? Those things that want to remain in power that you're unwilling to let go of? How is God calling you to be directed and guided and driven by something different? By a desire to know him more. As we sing this last song, we invite you to use this time to allow God to speak. If the result of that is prayer, then our altar is open, our prayer space is open. If you'd like to grab somebody and go pray with them, you can do that. But as we are approaching the moment when we mark and celebrate the birth of Christ, consider in your life right now, what does that mean to you? Is that worth following? Is that worth allowing your life to be directed by something new? Please stand in prayer with me.